The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Matt the Miz Mizler on the other side of the county. And, of course, it is time for the midweek peak. Before we get into that, though, look, folks, you're looking for a place for a great meal while you take in whatever sporting action you are looking at, whether it's the Olympics and checking out the 200-meter final tonight, for instance, which it was just run. I'm not going to give away who won it for those who are holding out for the intrigue. But if you're watching that, maybe you want to watch the Tigers take on the Red Sox. Did an outstanding job last night. Mickey got another step closer to 500 home runs. The bullpen was outstanding. You're watching that, right? Whatever it may be, watch your sports. Have a great meal. Black Rock Bar and Grill is the place to go. 3776 South State Street in Ann Arbor, where parking is ample and free even on game days. But, you know, what makes Black Rock special? You can get your steak, your shrimp, your seafood, whichever is your desire. To bring it out to your table, it's not cooked. And there's a 755-degree piece of volcanic rock at your table. And they do it that way so you can grill it to perfection, whatever level of doneness you like. Now, if you want them to cook it, they will. But again, you're missing out on part of the experience and the convenience of having that hot rock at your table, because after you grill it to perfection, you know, you're getting caught up in your sports or conversation. You get, you know, a few minutes in, 10 minutes in. Next thing you know, it's 20 minutes. The food is cooled off. Yeah, any other place, you're out of luck. Black Rock Bar and Grill, throw that food right back on the stone. Bring it up to temperature. It makes every bite just as good as the first bite. They also have great appetizers, you know, other entrees, the burgers, the steak and cheese. They have so many great options. And the dessert menu is second to none. Black Rock Bar and Grill, 3776 South State Street in Ann Arbor, where parking is ample and free, even on game days. Joining us, as he does every week around this time, for the midweek peak, none other than Steve Clark. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Hungry.
Right?
Same.
Thanks, Sam.
I hear you, bro. Hey, well, that's the goal. That's the goal. If you're hungry at the end of that, then I did my job, right? Did my job, Steve. So now, Steve, I need you to do something for me. Before we get into the breakdown, the midweek peak for this week, talk me off a ledge about the rumors about Kansas being in addition to the Big Ten. Am I the only one that thinks this is underwhelming, that if Kansas winds up being a play? And again, these are just rumors, unsubstantiated at that. But would you be disappointed if Kansas was the first move or the next move you heard about the Big Ten making?
You know, I wouldn't be disappointed if it was Kansas, just simply from a viewer who wants to see good basketball. I would be extremely disappointed in recollecting about how the other conference expansions and realignments happened, how the Big Ten chose, you know, to add Maryland, you know, and Rutgers, because it was all about municipalities and, you know, TV cable bookings. And I learned from the last realignment that basketball had absolutely nothing to do about it. If you had the 10 best basketball programs in a conference, the conferences would not invite them as a group into their conference, because it's all about football. It's all about football. It's all about football. And that was a realization. And if the approach is the same, that this is a disappointment. But as a fan person who likes basketball almost as much as he likes football, I'm okay with that. But you can't then sell it to me that this is a great pickup, because this is not how it went down a number of years ago.
And you can't sell to me that Kansas would be better in the Big Ten. Like I just said before you came on, Kansas, they cheat. They're dirty in the Big 12, and they still suck. Like, how do you cheat and still suck? Like, you aren't any better, even though you cheat, and the conference is not powerful. How does that happen? Like, you should be, if you're going to cheat, and I'm not advocating for it. But it's at least got to be worth it, right? You're at least supposed to show some progress.
You got to do well. You're right. You got to do well at it. And if Kansas has just started cheating, then, you know, their records for the number of consecutive Big 12 regular season championships went out the window because of it. Yeah, so, I mean, you could also make that argument that Kansas is lifting off its reputation as opposed to its performance. But, yeah, as we talked about last week, grabbing Oklahoma and Texas were the two top programs in the Big 12 by far. Everybody else is a disappointing, you know, leaves kind of a disappointing aftertaste. And if you make any type of move like that, then, I mean, it just dull is, you know, it's just dull in comparison.
Yeah, man. I hope that that's not true. All right. I mean, that's coming from Kansas insiders, which is convenient for them. I mean, I said Kansas would be falling up the stairs to go to the Big Ten. Even if the Big 12 had stayed intact, this would be an ideal move for them to be able to go to the Big Ten. So,
sure.
To me, you come around with Kansas on the back end. Now, the interesting thing, the Big 12 commissioner, Bob Bowlesby, and the Pac 12 commissioner, George Kilikoff, they reportedly met yesterday. Speculation is, and I think it's reasonable speculation, that they were talking merger or realignment. Which if you're the Pac 12, I would think that you would be more interested in having that conversation with the Big Ten. But why not listen to the Big 12? I suppose, especially if you're Kilikoff. And this is the one last thing, Steve, on this. I was trying to figure out what the appeal would be for the Pac-12 conference to merge with the remnants of the Big 12, right? These are all leftovers. Iowa State, Kansas, you get into Oklahoma State, Baylor. Like, these are, you know, the Kansas people, like, look at who they get. They would get the Central Time Zone. They would get Iowa State, who made bowl games in the last decade, and Baylor. Like, that's not making the case. Why would the Pac-12 find that appealing? And the only thing that I can come up with is maybe Kilikoff is looking at Bowlesby and seeing himself 5 years from now if the Big Ten comes to his conference and takes the four California schools and takes Washington and Oregon. There he would sit, looking for ways in which to keep the Pac-12 alive in ways that Bob Bowlesby is looking to try to keep the Big 12 alive. It's the only thing that makes sense, that maybe he's trying to, fortify his position to keep the members that he has, to keep them tied in so he doesn't wind up in a similar position.
Yeah, I mean, does the Big Ten West really need another bottom feeder that's, in the second 100 of, 133 NCAA football teams? I'm not sure. Years ago, again, if we were redoing realignment, if Iowa State's football, program rising under Matt Campbell continued, it probably would be considered back then a more attractable, attractable school than Kansas, who is, a blue blood of college basketball. But, that's what we were trained. That's what we were taught the last time around. I hear people nationally say it's different this time, but I'm not exactly convinced of that. And, of course, as you mentioned last hour, it might be a game of dominoes isn't the right word, but acquiring as many schools and assets as possible to protect you from being raided and protect you from being shoved around. So it might come down to, not only 16 but 20, knowing that some of your existing schools may be approached. And then the other thing is, it's a lot easier to hang on to the schools that you got than it is to attract others to come join you, unless you're the SEC.
All right, no doubt. Great stuff, Steve Clark. So let's get to the midweek peak portion as we continue with our opponent previews. Who's on the docket this week?
It is the Wisconsin Badgers, Sam. And, like Michigan, definitely impacted by COVID in 2020. The Badgers were expected to challenge Ohio State Instead, after a nearly perfect offensive performance in the opener, Wisconsin was 2-3 at one point in the season, rebounded with a 4-3 record and a win in the Mayo Bowl. But with that, raises some questions, mostly around their offense. But in the overall scheme of things, this isn't going to stop people from predicting that Wisconsin will recover from last year's disappointment.
No doubt. No doubt. All right. Yeah. You wouldn't know it watching that Michigan. I mean, they obviously did big time damage to Michigan, right? And yeah, there was a lot of talk after that game about the arrival of Graham Mertz. Remember, he was coming off of a fantastic opener against Illinois. He's the next great thing. And that Michigan game, even though they blew Michigan out, Steve, I came out of that game, I was like, man, Graham Mertz didn't have a great day. Graham Mertz missed some open guys against what wound up being a pretty porous defense. And so, you know, he had some growing pains last year, starting with the Badgers offense and talking about the guy, the highest recruited quarterback probably in their history, Graham mm-hmm. Mertz, maybe the primary contender for best quarterback in the league, you know, Michael Penix Jr. What do you see? What's the talk about the Badger offense?
Yeah, so, I mean, To start back with a little bit of history, I mean, if you had to describe Wisconsin football in a tweet, 250 characters, you'd talk about the dominant homegrown offensive line providing, you know, running room for a powerful or fast running back who usually starts for 3 years and then comes close to surpassing the NCAA all-time rushing mark, which was probably previously held by a Badger. That's the simple and brief truth in a tweet. But if you've been paying attention to Wisconsin, Sam, and I know you have, they've been improving at quarterback play throughout this century gradually. And now they think they have their own version of J.J. McCarthy with Graham Mertz. I mean, he's the number 3 pro-style quarterback in the class of 2019, number 65 nationally. This is a guy who now has his own clothing line. He has an exclusive partnership with a memorabilia company. And for Badger fans, he is seen as the completed link, not the missing link, but the completed link to get Wisconsin past Ohio State into their first ever college football playoff. Mertz redshirted in 2019, and in his debut as a starter in 2020, as you mentioned, I'll get very specific, against Illinois, 20-for-21 with a record 5 touchdown passes. And then he got COVID. And then the team got COVID. Then Mertz got injured, and then his receivers got injured and had concussions in the Michigan game, by the way, and it took their toll. The offense returned to being one-dimensional. They turned the ball over, Mertz included, and in the remaining 6 games, he threw for only 4 touchdown passes and 5 picks. Those 5 interceptions, by the way, came during a 3-game losing streak, in which he only had 1 touchdown pass to counter. The offense was nearly last in the Big Ten. Their vaunted rushing attack, because it became one-dimensional, was ranked in the middle of the pack. And now you have Mertz entering his 3rd year. Technically, he still has freshman eligibility. And there are questions, but his best receiving and rushing teammates are all back. And if that can remain stable, then I think Mertz could be a national name as the W's rack up for Wisconsin.
Gotcha. All right. So, yeah, it's reasonable to think that the last year full of growing pains will position Graham Mertz to have a much better turn this year. Always good if you have one of those traditional Wisconsin offensive lines to protect you and to plow the ground for the rushing game. So what does Wisconsin look like on the offensive line this year?
So they're replacing 2 very good and familiar starters, but you know, they don't seem to be too concerned at Madison from what I can tell. They're absolutely solid at the tackle positions. Very good there. The line was ridiculously good in 2018. They all returned in 2019 and then underperformed somewhat. And then 2020 was, you know, I'm just calling it a wash with the COVID and the limited offense, the injuries, the new quarterback, et cetera. It's sort of like, you know, Chad Henne not having Mike Hart or Braylon Edwards in 2004. He just didn't have the tools. And, you know, they, as an offensive line, they have recruited better than normal over the past 3 years. So I would not expect them to let up anytime soon, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, man, it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Wisconsin always seems to have backs.
Yeah,
Steve, what about the running back position?
So how about this, Sam? For over two decades, Wisconsin hasn't seemed to miss on a top-notch running back. You got Ron Dayne, Jonathan Taylor, Monty Ball, Melvin Gordon, and Anthony Davis. What they have in common, Sam, is that they are five Badger running backs listed in the Big Ten's all-time career top 10 rushing list.
Wow.
So simply put, the top 10 backs in the history of the Big Ten, five of them are Badgers, all from the last 25 years. And let's not forget other guys like P.J. Hill, Brent Moss, John Clay. I mean, it is literally like an Ohio State reload. You know, new Wisconsin running back, going to be all Big Ten. Now, in Madison, of course, right now, again, they finished 4-3, and it happened to be at a year where a guy like Jalen Berger, who's, you know, a freshman, didn't have any established Wisconsin credibility. This was his rookie season. And so they kind of wonder, is this, you know, is Jalen Berger going to be our first miss, and what are we going to do about it? But Wisconsin has alternatives. So you look at first glance, Berger's freshman numbers, you aren't awed. I mean, he's well behind the curve, 301 yards, two touchdowns. Now, I mean, this is a free year for him. He can add on to that without losing any eligibility. But this doesn't share the whole story. He started as a backup, as a true freshman, eventually won the starting job, forced Nakia Watson, you remember him, to transfer to the Pac-12. His lack of total production, and I'm talking about Berger, is probably due to the opportunities that he didn't have early on. He still carried over a 5 yard per carry average. Wisconsin has a new running backs coach who came from the Dallas Cowboys. And he says, I'm not saying he's DeMarco Murray, but he's comparing Berger's skill set and explosiveness to DeMarco Murray, who, by the way, is a 3-time Pro Bowler with the Dallas Cowboys. And because two other backs on the depth chart have had injuries throughout their careers, Paul Chris did more than just window shopping at transfer portal. It isn't the SEC. He didn't make a purchase. But he was able to snag.
You got that one off.
Good. He was able to snag Ches Malusi from Clemson. Now, Malusi appeared to be falling to third on the depth chart, and so that means you go straight to the portal. And Malusi had 6 touchdowns, 427 yards, 2 years with the Tigers. Also competing at the running back position is a 17-year-old sensation named Braylon Allen. Sam, now I don't know, if you know who he is or not. You probably do. He's a top 300 overall player by 24/7, but ranked that way as a safety. And up until recently, they thought maybe he would, move down to linebacker. But they actually converted him to offense, where in high school he averaged nearly 15 yards per carry with 21 touchdowns. So head coach, Paul Chris, clear that he's a head coach to want to make sure that his running back cupboard is absolutely full. And what's striking is that in the year where the rushing was subpar, man, they had 341 yards on the ground in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, I think that says more about Michigan than it does about let's get back.
I don't want to be too negative, but
that's just you put it in context. There's a lot of teams that had success against Michigan's defense last year. That's why I say Graham Mertz in that game, their rushing game last year, you would expect for them to have some success when you look at against the backdrop of how Michigan's defense performed against the rest of its schedule as well. But let's dive into who is Graham Mertz throwing to? Who does he have in the way of what does he have in the way of targets this year?
Familiar names. I mentioned earlier how injuries derailed the Wisconsin offense, and their top two receivers, Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor, missed most of the season with concussions. The duo, who combined for over 2,000 yards and 16 touchdowns, both elected to return this season because, in part, they did not want their Wisconsin career to end that way. Their team going 4-3, winning the Mayo Bowl, and you know, being out most of the year with concussions. So having them back is huge. Plus, that should change the outlook, I think, from last year. Makes Wisconsin a two-dimensional team. And it's, I think they're going to help Mertz play like a conference top five quarterback. I mean, when those guys were in the game, they were absolutely lights out against Illinois. And, you know, the rushing attack was lights out against Michigan when they were playing in part of those games. In addition, they returned the top two statistical leaders from that position group last year. And their future includes Marcus Allen, who they flipped from the Wolverines. So if you're keeping score, last week Michigan had a starter transfer to IU on the offensive line, and now Wisconsin is flipping a Wolverine commitment. So, good gravy. Let's not forget Big Ten's tight end of the year, Jake Ferguson. He's returning as well. I won't mention who his grandfather is. I think everybody knows it. He has a shot at winning the Mackey Award as the best in the nation this season. And
he retired with Barry Alvarez, man.
Did we have to mention that? That's one of those things. If you hear Jake Ferguson, you're going to hear grandson of Barry Alvarez every single time. That's just guaranteed. Right. Absolutely guaranteed. But with the injuries to Davis and Pryor, Ferguson led the team in catches, yards, touchdowns, lots of weapons. Again, both the receiver and tight end. Maybe not as many as Ohio State. And since they run a lot of 12 and 21 personnel, you're not going to see a whole lot of four receiver sets at Wisconsin often, if at all. So I think, you know, receivers might feel like they're not getting as much playing time. But as we've seen in Ohio State, as long as they're winning, they don't seem to care that much.
No doubt. All right. So what we need to do now is take a break, take a pause. And when we come back on the other side, we will look at the Badgers. On the other side of the ball, look at the Badgers defense in our midweek peek with Steve Clark, part two, second half. We're going to return here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.